recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild. Hi, this is the Community Living Show here on the NCRA Radio Networks. That's the National Campus and Radio Association networks throughout British Columbia and hopefully throughout Canada if we do our broadcast through it. My name is Kelly Rayburn. This is the program that we do with special needs and disabilities, again, throughout British Columbia. And we do it on two radio stations on our flagship station, CITR 101.9 FM. And we're streaming online at CITR.ca. And then our second part of the show is the half-hour show, which we originally do basically since the very beginning. So the Community Living Show used to be called the Self-Advocacy Show on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. So we've been doing this show for quite a long time. So we're getting used to it anyway. So anyways, Michael Rubin isn't here. I haven't talked to him about what plans that he wanted to do today. I thought he was going to do something for today, but obviously he's not around. Obviously he's still at White Rock. And best of luck of him. Anyways, I'm flying solo right now. So I'm going to get right onto it. So we're going to play a little bit of the Let's Talk Autism as of yesterday. It was podcast yesterday with your hosts, Shannon Hernold and Nancy Esparoglock. I can't even pronounce it right. Esblock Jackson. That's who it is. And of course, if you want to you want to sign in for their Autism Lives free newsletter, you can check them out, www.autism-live.com and /join-r-email-list.aspx. So if you want to check them out, on there. Autism Live is a production of Center of Autism-Related Disorders, known as CARD, headquartered in Woodland Hills, California, which offers offices throughout the United States, and around the globe, of course. For more information on the therapy and other related disorders, visit CARD at centerforautism.com. Here we go with the podcast. We will be back with you in just a few moments. You're tuned into Community Living Show. I am, of course, Kelly Rayburn. We will be back in a minute.
Welcome to Let's Talk Autism with Shannon and Nancy. Here we are.
And I'm Shannon.
And I'm Nancy.
How about that? That worked out. And we got a big, big hour here. Lots of stuff to be talking about. We're going to have a guest here and a little bit. Christina Bant Jenkins is going to be talking with us about a project, This is Autism. So we're going to be talking about that. We've got a bunch of in the news. And I promised them that we were going to show some stuff with Brian McKnight, Grammy Award-winning Brian McKnight, and the wonderful things that he says about Denim and Diamonds.
And just, you know, what an advocate he is for our kids. And we honored him recently at Denim and Diamonds. So we're going to be showing some videos from that event that those of you that weren't able to attend to see what Brianna Eady, who is an up-and-coming star, remarkably talented young woman, what she has to say about autism, and what Brian has to say, and Brian interacting with my son, Wyatt, and the wonderful Carter Thiero, who is also on the spectrum, and just kind of sharing some of the things, because, you know, not everybody can come to a big gala, and just want to let people know what other activists are out there doing.
Absolutely. And I do want to give two quick programming notes, because I know we have a lot of people tune into the start of the show, that we are going to be doing another live segment today at 2. We're actually going to be on Facebook Live at around 12:15, 12:30 with some of the regional managers that are in from all over the country here with CARD. And then at 2 o'clock, we are going to be back live here with Alex Lehman, I'm not sure which pronunciation, but he is the director of the film Asperger's Are Us. I got to screen the film last night, and so he'll be here with me to talk about that. So that's coming up later on today, in case I forget to mention. And the other thing is that the site is open right now for people who are in the Los Angeles area to get their tickets. They're free tickets, but there are a limited number of them for our Sensitive Santa event that we do in conjunction with Autism Care and Treatment Today. We do in conjunction with We Rock the Spectrum, mm-hmm. Gyms. My Brother Rocks the Spectrum, Skills, and CARD.
And when is that?
It is on Saturday, November 26th. It's 2 days after Thanksgiving. It is at the Woodland Hills We Rock the Spectrum Gym. If you go on Eventbrite, you can search for it there, Autism Live Sensitive Santa, and get your tickets. The children, you sign up for an hour period of time, and you come for the whole hour. Your kids get to play in the gym. There are ABA-trained therapists there to keep the peace during that hour. There's a limited number of tickets per hour. You're given a number as you come into the gym. Your child's playing on the gym when it's your turn for your number, so there's no waiting in line. You're playing on stuff. When it's your child's turn, the elves come and get you and bring you into the room with a specially trained sensitive Santa. You get to spend time with Santa, take as many pictures as you want. No one sells anything. It's not a thing where you come and it's $15.99 for a photo. It's not about that. You get to take pictures and take your time doing it, and then your child gets a toy. And then they get to go back and finish playing until the hour is up. So tell your friends, if you're here in the Los Angeles area, that is the Saturday after Thanksgiving. We're doing it early this year. So that's going on. Now, lots of news. And I want to say, you know, it's been a hard week for everyone. Let's mm-hmm. just go there. It's been a hard week for
everyone. I'm having a lot of struggles. It's around the time of year that my husband went into the hospital last year
yes.
and never returned.
Yes.
And it's bringing up a lot of triggers for me.
Of
and Wyatt.
Of course, of course.
You know, we talk about our kids. I think our kids, on a deep cellular level, experience trauma and experience
yep.
emotions, and they aren't able, many of them, of course, to express it in the
yes.
way we do. And us typical people sometimes bury those emotions.
Yes.
They come out later.
Absolutely. And I think that, and you know, and this is not about a political thing, but a lot of people on every side of every argument have talked about having, you know, deep feelings of anxiety in
yes.
the last week. And a lot of parents have been writing in saying that they've seen a spike in tantrums and things like that. And obviously, we have seen that with adults as well.
Right. And my son is going back to things that were familiar to him when he was little. He's
yes.
very into Thomas the Tank Engine. It's like all he wants to watch. And he's even watching that show Caillou, which I grates on my nerves. But
it's one of those shows. You either like it or it makes you nuts.
It's obvious to me why he's watching it, and that
yeah.
is because it's the perfect family. There's not only a mother, a father, and a little sister. There's grandparents.
Right.
He has none of that.
And it also, I would imagine, reminds him of the time when he was watching that, when he had more of that.
Right. He had grandparents. He had a father.
Yes.
You know, yeah. So
and we're all wanting to retreat to a time when we felt comfortable.
And
safe. And we pick whatever,
yeah,
whatever
safe.
It is that
I think,
helps us. Yes.
I think when we feel unsafe, our anxiety levels just go way up, and our kiddos. So important to remember that if you're going through this, I'm going through it, you're not alone.
Yeah. And I want to say this, that we had said last week that no matter what happens, we want to continue to report the news of how this affects our community. And so please know that we're going to start to cover some news stories because there's information that we think that you want to hear. We don't want to overwhelm anybody. But we don't want to sit back and say, gloss it over and say nothing is happening. So our first headline is that just the 2 days after the election, that there were 149 reports of people bullied by, according to this headline, emboldened bigots, and the list is growing. Mm-hmm. I think we have all heard a story in this last week that has either touched us or come very close to touching us personally, with people being exclusive instead of inclusive. Mm-hmm. And no matter what happens, I think it's incumbent upon all of us to stand up in unity against that kind of behavior,
yes,
whatever it is.
Now, this is a report that in a single day, there were three cases of bullying. One in a classroom, and these are documented.
Yes.
Students in Minnesota were greeted with, I can't say it, F star, star star K, and then N star 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 ends with an S,
right,
written on their door. And a Michigan middle school had a small group of children saying, chanting, "Build that wall," while their fellow students who were Latino were crying. Another one had students in Pennsylvania marching with Donald Trump signs saying "White Power." And then there was the well-documented drive through Wesley College where some kids were harassing black students. And, you know, these are just, and then there was a South Philly neighborhood that had Nazi graffiti smeared in it. So
in my hometown of Saratoga, New York, a very artsy-fartsy kind of town that in the winter is kind of a small-town feel, a friend of mine who still lives there posted, she said, "I cannot believe that this is my hometown and this is my neighborhood," that on her walk to work, she saw, and she took a picture of it, that somebody had spray-painted a swastika on the parking lot thing. You know, and these kinds of things will contribute to people feeling unsafe. I don't think it's inappropriate for people to feel unsafe when these kinds of behaviors are happening, and the list is endless. And we both have had circumstances of people that we know and love, and we don't want to, you know, name names and make them feel more uncomfortable, but people who have had things said to them in the last week that are just inappropriate. Inappropriate. I don't know what people are thinking. But I do think it's time, and you used this phrase, and you said it's a phrase that Reed used, and it's the thing that has rung in my head over and over. It's time to circle the wagons. And we need to, if we're feeling anxiety, we need to acknowledge that our kids are, mm-hmm. and we send our kids to school, and we need to circle the wagons around our kids. We need to make sure that we are vigilant, and that when we see or hear someone doing something like this, that we immediately... I saw a great video the other day that showed somebody who was on a park bench and somebody came up to them and was saying stuff to them. And they showed the safe way to deal with it, which is to go up and not address the person who is doing the aberrant behavior, to address the person who is on the receiving end of it with love and say, "Hey, how are you doing today?" and show solidarity. And it shows the young woman sitting next to the young woman who's being harassed and saying, I love your scarf. And, you know, hey, I'm Shannon, nice to meet you," and completely ignore the idiot stick who's making, because you don't want to get confrontation with these people.
No, you can't get confrontation.
They're in the middle
somebody.
Of a tantrum.
Yeah, yeah.
They are in
you
the middle of a
get
tantrum.
Confrontational.
And you cannot go there, but you stand in solidarity with the other person, and you just sit and talk with them, and you focus together and show that you're not going away, mm-hmm. And that that's how that is, mm-hmm. and that eventually, you know, it's that whole thing about the fire and the oxygen. The fire has to have oxygen to stay, and if you just shut the oxygen out of it and just are having a great conversation with a person, eventually idiot sticks move on.
Yes.
That's the technical term for it, idiot stick.
Okay, idiot sticks. I do want to say that these incidences of bullying that we mentioned that are documented, there was a story the other night on the O'Reilly Report, his lead story, that there is no evidence, he said, of bullying being up, because he said in terms of criminal charges being filed, and that he was debating this, and the debaters that were saying, you can't be saying that there's not bullying on the rise in America, and he said there is no evidence of increased criminal charges being filed since the election against bullying. So I do want to say he went on record as saying that.
Well, and this is O'Reilly who said this?
Yeah, Bill O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, for all the people that I know that experienced this, not a single one of them called the police.
Right.
Not a single one of them.
We can't really, his point as a news, and he says he's a commentator. He did not say he's a journalist, but he said that with all of this talk about bullying being on the rise, there is not an increase, and he had done heavy research on this, on criminal charges being filed because of bullying. It's not increased.
Well,
so that was his point of view. So
I get it.
His point of view.
And it's a valid point of view. It just isn't the correct litmus test to determine whether this is happening or
not.
Right.
Right. Okay.
I saw Megyn Kelly on the Today Show this morning talking with Savannah Guthrie about sexual harassment that happened on Fox News Channel, and was talking about not reporting it.
Right.
And so we could say, oh, sexual harassment isn't happening because women aren't reporting it. And people do say that. And you and I both know that that is a steaming pile of you-know-what. All right, moving on.
Okay.
Ask me how I feel. But, okay, so we do need to report about, there are some nominations that we're hearing about from the Trump, president-elect Trump. And one of them that we definitely need to talk about, there's a C to talk about. What we need to talk about is the Bannon nomination.
Yes.
And this is a gentleman, and we want to make you guys aware of this. We want you to make your own decisions.
Yes.
But he was in charge of Breitbart, you know, we're going to read you something that is from Breitbart that is attributed not to him, but he approved it. And I think that that's an important distinction to make.
Very
but
important
this
distinction.
This is what we are looking at right now. So the headline here is, the solution to online harassment is simple. Women should log off. Okay, it gets better. Look, I know it's not an ideal situation. In a perfect universe, we would be able to cooperate and coexist in the same environment, acting respectfully for each other's views and the freedom of the land. But that just isn't the world we live in. Time for some honesty. Women are, and you won't hear this anywhere else, screwing up the internet for men by invading every space we have online and ruining it with attention-seeking and a needy, demanding, touchy-feely form of modern feminism that quickly comes into conflict with men's natural tendency to be boisterous, confrontational, and delightfully autistic. Nancy? Thoughts?
When I read this, this came up just recently because, you know, there was a lot of back and forth about Bannon and his appropriateness in many areas, and whether he should be in a cabinet position, or not a cabinet position, but in the inner circle of the presidency. This was glossed over.
The biggest influencer of our president.
I don't think too many people caught this, that on Breitbart was written that modern feminism comes into conflict with men's natural tendency to be boisterous, confrontational, and delightfully, delightfully autistic.
This is from July of this year. This is
delightfully
not
autistic. So I would like to say to the person who wrote this on Breitbart that if you think it is at all appropriate to say that men get to be delightfully autistic, I am telling you, from an autism mom, you are wrong.
All right, so we're going to have to leave it there. So you're tuned into the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. And, of course, we're online at... CITR.ca if you're on the Vancouver system here on the flagship station. And, of course, if you're on the half-hour show, cooprio.org. We're going to take a break right now, and we will be back with Michael Rubin and guests in just a few moments. So just stick around. We will be back in a moment. You're tuning in to Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
Now in its 16th year, Media Democracy Days brings together media makers, activists, and educators to celebrate independent media and social change. Media Democracy Days is happening this year at the Central Branch of the Vancouver Public Library on November 15th and 16th. The event includes a community radio takeover of the Inspiration Lab on the 15th and 16th at the Central Branch of the Vancouver Public Library, and a full day of hands-on workshops, discussions, and collaboratively determined events on November 19th at SFU Vancouver's Harbour Centre campus. This year's keynote speaker is Ryan McMahon of the Red Man Laughing podcast. The event is free to attend. Visit 2016.mediademocracydays.ca for a full program.
All right, you're tuning in to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. That's the National Campus and Radio Association networks throughout British Columbia and Canada. And Michael's here.
Yeah, I finally finally made it. the high rivers and everything else, the Serpentine River's up down by White Rock. You know,
oh, wow.
Tied up traffic all the way up to the Massey Tunnel.
You can be struggling.
Yeah.
But, you should leave early. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
You should leave early.
Well, 2 hours early, you would think that I would still be able to get here.
Yeah, you know, well, I still say seven. You should leave early.
I leave my house at 7, so.
Yeah, okay, well.
Anyway.
Maybe leave 6. That's all I can
maybe.
Say.
Maybe.
All right.
Anyway, we have today with us Kira Lynn. She's a life coach, registered professional counselor, psychotherapist, and author. And her book is about chronic pain, but I'm going to actually let her introduce the title of the book. Mm-hmm. Kira, are you there?
Hi, yes, I'm here. Thank
okay.
you for having me. My book is called Aches, Pains, and Love, and it's a guide to dating and relationships for those with chronic pain and illness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... And it's more than just that, because I do spend a fair amount of time in the book just on basics of creating a foundation for yourself before you even look at dating and relationships. So what do you need in place to live the best life you can be living?
Right. Well, there's certain things if you're going to enter into a relationship, you have to have certain things in place. Even if you don't suffer with chronic pain, you have to be on have a solid foundation of self before you can bring somebody else into your life, right?
Yeah, a solid foundation of self. I think in all aspects, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, mm-hmm. if that's something that's important to you. Physically, just making sure you're taking care of yourself, getting enough sleep, eating well, drinking water, having the right people on your side in terms of doctors and other practitioners. Mental, emotional, having a good friend, family, coworker, partner support system, having, you know, if you need a counselor, having a counselor or a coach, really having that set up for yourself. If spirituality is important to you, having your spiritual practice in place so that once you do meet someone, you have a solid foundation to support you.
Mm-hmm. So it's from the looks of it, how do you guide people through such things?
Well, that's a good question. It's usually not a linear process, and it really depends on who I'm working with and what their starting point is.
Mm-hmm.
Some people come in newly diagnosed with no idea where to start. So we start at the very beginning with, you know, what does this illness mean to you? What does the pain mean? And talk about grieving what they're losing by getting the diagnosis that they've had. Some people come in a little further down the journey where they've grieved their losses. They're in the process of accepting the illness, and they want to do more. You know, and people come in with varying levels of awareness and around their conditions. So I really work with people from where they're at and look at where they want to go and help them get there.
Yeah. I like that you brought up grief, because most people don't understand that because you have a chronic illness, even in this case, chronic pain itself being its own illness, that there's a loss of stuff.
Yeah.
And I say stuff because for me, it was being able to rock climb.
Yeah.
And the day I was planning this trip up a mountain, and they looked at me, he's like, you know, that's not going to happen, right? and so how do you get people to accept that?
You know, that's a tough one, and I struggled with it myself. I mean, when I first became ill, I'd look around and there's people, you know, bicycling, jogging, working full time, dancing, traveling, having families, all these things I wanted, but I couldn't have. And I went through so much jealousy, envy, rage, anger, frustration around that. So I know what it can be like to try and accept that. And I think it's really what I do is help people familiarize themselves with the grieving process, because that's really what happens when you start to realize that, wait a sec, I can't do these things anymore, at least not right now. And I think a lot of people feel comforted when they realize, okay, the emotions I'm feeling are not abnormal. It's okay for me to be angry about this and to be sad, and know that, you know, eventually those feelings will lessen. So yeah, I do, you know, some grief education and normalizing their feelings. And yeah, it's, you know, ultimately it just really sucks that you can't do what you used to be able to do and you want to do. I work a lot with people on acceptance. Acceptance is tough because we want to fight. We want to fight our illness. We want to win. But in many cases, fighting can be futile and more exhausting. So I like to talk about accepting and accepting the, your health condition the way it is now, because that doesn't mean you're accepting it the way that it's going to be this way forever. You're simply saying, okay, right now, this is my health condition, and this is my starting point. Rather than saying, okay, I'm going to wait till I start my, you know, dealing with this till I feel better. It's about, okay, let's start where you are now. This is where you're at. Let's start here and then move forward. I do a lot of work with cognitive behavioral therapy and around the thoughts we have about our illness. And I find that can be helpful too.
How is that helpful?
Well, I want to sort of start by explaining the concept of primary suffering and secondary suffering.
Okay.
Primary suffering, yeah, is the suffering, the physical sensations, pain, and fatigue and other sensations that we experience as a result of our health conditions. Primary suffering is often, there's not a lot you can do about it a lot of the time. You know, you might be able to take some medications, do some therapies, or take some remedies that help reduce it. But, you know, when you have chronic pain and illness, you're going to experience a certain level of physical suffering. Secondary suffering are the distressing emotions that we have about our primary suffering. So when we have, say, pain amplifies, and then we think, oh my God, my pain's never going to go away. And so then we have feelings like anger and frustration and sadness and helplessness. And so then when we pile all these emotions on top of the primary suffering, we can become really overwhelmed and feel very helpless. But we do have the power to control the secondary suffering. The primary suffering is inevitable, but the secondary suffering isn't. And a lot of the emotions that we're feeling, the secondary suffering emotions come as a result of the thoughts we have about our primary suffering or health conditions. Like you mentioned earlier, oh my gosh, I'm going to be in pain forever. That's mm-hmm. going to really, I would feel fear and scared at that thought. And we can't know for sure that we're going to be in pain forever or that it's going to get worse. So it's about challenging those thoughts and saying, well, there's a chance I won't be in pain forever. There's a chance if I rest today, I'll have less pain tomorrow. I don't know for sure. So really challenging the fearful and negative thoughts that we have about our health condition or primary suffering.
Yeah. I like this saying that one doctor I know said it is like, okay, it hurts today.
Mm-hmm.
And deal with today and then worry about tomorrow.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you try to guide people into that sort of thought.
Yeah. Well, I do a lot of work with mindfulness and being present, and yeah, a lot of work with thought. You know, you're okay in this moment right now, and that's what matters.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we project into the past, and especially into the future, when we have chronic illness, we can become very fearful, and it can be really scary because we don't know what's going to happen, and our brain amplifies and thinks, oh my gosh, all these horrible things can happen, especially if you go on the internet and research your condition. So yeah, being in the moment right now and knowing that right now I'm okay, and in this next moment that I'm okay, and that can bring a lot of relief just to focus on where you are today.
Yeah. Okay. How does this process help a person deal with what's going on with their body, what they can do, can't do,
mm-hmm.
all that sort of stuff in the present? We're not going to worry about the future.
Right.
We're just going to deal with the present, right?
Right.
So how does all that help them in the present?
So the secondary suffering, all those stressful emotions that we mm-hmm. can experience as a result of the thoughts we have about our illness, can be really exhausting, draining, and can often, they create stress, and stress can often increase physical sensations. So by reducing that secondary suffering, we can open up some space, take some pressure off ourselves. We might even feel better physically, have a little more energy. And that way we open up some space where we're not being drained, and we can make room for something that maybe brings us joy or something pleasurable. So rather than, being really upset, not being able to focus on something that you want to do, when you're not worried about the future, you can have some time to perhaps do something creative or read or play with your pet without worrying about other things, or just being present and enjoying finding a small space that you can enjoy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the small spaces, it's comforting, right?
Yes, it's comforting. And yeah. I think, when you live with pain, we need to manage our expectations around how big our fun zone is, or pleasure or joy zone, and make it okay that the little things are what bring us joy, small things. And that's okay. When you're present, the small things can be more meaningful, and it's okay that we're not going out and taking exotic trips or going to big parties. It's okay that, the little bird outside your window in the mornings brings you joy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The little things are really, can become very profound.
Does that give a person a better basis to build back from? Because sometimes you may not get all the way back to the same level that you were, but you can actually move along move forward from where you are to another point where you can be more active.
And I think that's really an individual experience. Mm-hmm. Depending, there's so many variations on fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and the conditions that sort of come together as a cluster with those. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, it's so individual. I think some people can definitely improve physically, while others may not. I think one of the biggest tools that I've used to improve, you know, I've managed to improve, absolutely, and then I've plateaued. So I think, you know, you can improve to a point quite often, and then you're at your best. But what's really helped me is the concept of pacing. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you talk about on your show?
When we talk about chronic pain, yeah, we do talk about pacing, and that's part of what I was getting at is because without pacing, you might do more harm than good, right?
Absolutely, because when you don't pace, so if you're not pacing, you can end up in this push crash cycle or boom bust, however you like to refer to it. So what happens is, you know, you have chronic pain illness, you're kind of couch bound or bed bound or house bound, and it's frustrating because you have a long to-do list and it keeps getting longer. And so finally you have a good day and you think, great, I'm going to pack everything into the day because I feel good and I've got the energy, I'm doing this. And you do all your errands, you visit people, you get appointments in, and then whoops, you overdid it, and then you crash, and it takes, you've got to recover, whether that takes days, weeks, or months. You're really sidelined. And then, you know, all this, and then the frustration starts to build again. Then you start to feel better. And, oh, another good day. And then, boom, you do it all, overexert yourself, and then you crash again. And you end up with this, you know, really high highs energy-wise and low lows. And what can often happen is when you're in these extremes, overall, you end up, your good days can, you end up having less energy progressively on your good days. So you are reducing the overall energy you have by allowing those spikes to happen. Mm-hmm. When you pace, you only do as much as you can so that you don't overexert yourself and create a crash. So it's about doing a little bit on your good day so you don't have such a bad day. And then you can do a little bit again sooner than had you had to go through a whole crash. It's about keeping things more even. And when you do that, you have the potential to slowly build more energy. You know, push yourself just as far as you can without exacerbating your symptoms. And make sure you're getting lots of rest.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you were really successful with that because you wrote a book. It's like, yes. I'm sure it you had to pace your way through it. And
I did.
The same thing, I'll tell a little bit about how we actually met. It was at the Willowbrook Mall, and you were doing a book signing, and I was doing a calendar signing.
Mm-hmm.
And we purchased one of your books, and you purchased one of our calendars. But the book wouldn't have happened if you hadn't paced, right?
And that's
right. I know for sure that the calendar, it took me a year and a half of training to be able to do that walk that produced the calendar.
Wow. Yeah.
So it wasn't like I just woke up and was like, okay, we're just going to, in a group of us, we're going to walk across BC. It's like, no, we had to train, and it's like little steps at a time, right?
Mm-hmm. Little steps. I worked on my book for an hour a day for about 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. You know, even when I could do more, I would stop at an hour, and I have trouble typing, so I started using the dictation app on my laptop, anything to make things easier to avoid symptoms from getting worse. Just pacing. And then, you know, if you have an off day, and if I had really bad brain fog, giving myself a break and saying, okay, I'm not going to do this today because my body just isn't up for it.
Right.
So, you know, I think having compassion for yourself is so important. You know, that inner critic that we often have that wants us to push and tells us we're not doing enough and tells us that there's something wrong with us and we're flawed. We need, mm-hmm. you know, he needs to be quiet.
Right. Sometimes it's kind of difficult to silence that voice. And Kelly is giving me
the time.
a message that it's time for our break, and we're going to get back to you at the point of being compassionate for ourselves.
All right.
So, So we're going to take a break. I'm going to put you on hold for just a moment and sell you some stuff. All right. Well, I wouldn't say sell you some stuff, but we'll be back in a moment here on the Community Living Show. Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
Discorder,
a magazine from CITR 101.9 FM,
presents a showcase of emerging Vancouver-based hip-hop artists Friday, November 18th at the Media Club.
The lineup is comprised of some of the most talked about and should be talked about hip-hop artists in Vancouver,
including So Loki, Missy D, Romy, Something August, Spotty Joseph, and Freeman Young, with CITR's Crimes and Treasons DJing and emceeing this 19-plus event.
We them boys! Be sure to come check us out. We're Crimes and Treasons Radio. We're going to be hosting and DJing at the Media Club. Be sure to come check us out.
Crimes and Treasons.
For more information and tickets, visit discorder.ca.
Let me refresh your memory. Russians! That's right. Russians, Ruskies, communists, communists. Oh, now you remember.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Russian Tim, and I'm the host of weekly punk rock radio show called Rocket from Russia. Every Tuesday, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., Rocket from Russia is aired on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, or CITR.ca, anywhere where internet is paid for. On the show, I play new, local, and international punk rock, and I also do interviews with members of punk bands and people from the punk rock scene. If you'd like to check out the previous interviews, episodes of Rocket from Russia, and the list of upcoming shows in Vancouver, head down to my blog, rocketfromrussia.tumblr.com. Great success!
You're tuned in to the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks, the National Campus and Community Radio Association Networks. We've got about a few more minutes until we say goodbye to our half-hour show on Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM. That's our half-hour show flagship station. Of course, our flagship station is CITR 101.9 FM. All of those stations are equipped with the National Campus and Radio Association Networks, which is the NCRA Radio Networks. All right, Michael.
And we're speaking with Kira Lynn, and she wrote the book, Aches, Pains, and Love. And it says it's a guide to dating relationships for those with chronic pain and illness. And we left it at the point where you were talking about... Kira, you were talking about being compassionate to yourself. So let's take it up from there.
And it can be really hard to have compassion for yourself, you know, when you combine the inner critic in your mind. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we believe that our chronic pain and illness is our fault. But you didn't ask for this, and it's not your fault that you have chronic pain and illness, no matter what you might believe. You deserve your own compassion. Mm-hmm. And I found that my route to compassion was first by accepting myself and my health condition, which led to a lot of relief. It took a lot of pressure off me. And then I was able to have compassion for myself and say, yeah, I'm going to be kind to myself. I'm going to give myself a break. talk to myself in a more loving way rather than being so critical and being so hard on myself, because that wasn't getting me anywhere. And I think, you know, one of the keys is forgiving yourself for being sick or in pain. I think a lot of people don't even realize that they're blaming themselves. And when I ask, you know, people, have you forgiven yourself for being sick? You know, I sort of get those look crosses their face and they think, no, I can't do that. So, you know, it's not necessarily an overnight. It's a daily forgiveness that you may need to practice for a while. And that, you know, we deserve our own compassion. We haven't done anything wrong. We don't deserve this. And we deserve the same sort of care we would give someone else in our position.
Right. So I had to ask this because we've been talking a lot about your book and how you help people. So at the height of things before your chronic illness and chronic pain, where were you? Well, obviously you've wrote the book, and maybe you can give a little the clip notes on the journey to where you are now.
Yeah. Well, where was I before it hit? I was a teenager, and then I started developing pain in my teens. I had fibromyalgia symptoms since my teens, but it wasn't diagnosed until my late 30s. So I started having a lot of pain in my body, swallowing handfuls of painkillers in my teens and early 20s. You know, being shuffled around to various doctors and not getting really a definitive diagnosis or answers or solutions. Mm-hmm. But I kind of managed through my 20s, started getting, you know, seeing a few more knowledgeable doctors about pain. There really wasn't a lot of information out there, I don't think, 20 years ago about pain and how to manage pain, at least not within the medical community I was in. In my 30s, I was hit by more severe health conditions, interstitial cystitis and myalgic encephalomyelitis, also known as chronic fatigue syndrome, and the fibromyalgia really became worse. I'd been working in law, and in my mid-30s, I had to quit my job because I just wasn't able to go into the office every day and sit at a desk and do the work because of the amount of pain I was in and the amount of fatigue I had. So I was forced to quit that career, and I actually went back to school to become a counselor and a life coach, which wasn't easy to do, but I did it because I felt that was more in line with my purpose. Becoming sick really made me question my purpose and what was I meant to do here in this lifetime, and it wasn't working in law. It was helping other people, so I wanted to be able to focus on that. And it hasn't been easy. It's been a real struggle. But I've now created a practice for myself, a counseling and coaching practice that I work part-time, working on the book, working on my next book. Mm. And I've sort of managed to create a life despite the illness and pain. It's been a lot of work, but it's also been extremely rewarding.
Tell our listeners that, hey, if you ever get in contact, we're running out of time for a half hour programmers on Co-op Radio. Just give our listeners some information on your contact and everything.
Yeah, the best way to find me is through my website, and that's www.kiralynne.com, KIRALYNNE.com. And you can reach me there through email or by phone. I'm also going to be doing a talk at Banyan Books in Vancouver on Wednesday, November 23rd, where I'm going to be talking about living with joy and purpose when you have chronic pain and illness. It's going to be sort of an interactive talk. I think it'll be fun. It'll be an uplifting and hopefully inspirational evening, and I'm really looking forward to doing that. So that will be a lot of fun. So if you would like to come out and meet me, I will be there. Otherwise, you can find me online.
All right. So for those of you listening to us on Co-op Radio, we're going to have to say goodbye to you right now. This is our half-hour show that we normally would do. For everybody else, we will be back with Station ID and in just a few moments. So you're tuned into the Community Living Show. We will be back in just a few moments.
You're listening to CITR 101.9. Broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
And we're back for the full hour show on the Community Living Show. We got about another 7 more minutes till we really wrap up the information. So, Michael, take it away.
And again, we're with Kira Lynn, author of the book Aches, Pains, and Love. And you just said you were going to be doing a book signing, was it?
It's a talk, actually, about living with chronic pain and illness and how to create joy and purpose when you have those conditions. And it's going to be at Banyan Books in Vancouver on Wednesday, November 23rd from 6:30 to 8.
Cool. And we were getting a little bit about your story of how you came with fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome, and there was another one.
It's hard for me to pronounce. There's actually quite a few more.
Yeah,
but I try to stick with a couple so as not to for it to get too overwhelming.
Right. So you're helping people from the point of you had suffered, you had loss. You said that you started down the career path with law and then had to switch careers.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like from the positive point, it looks like this one is more promising. You're actually helping more people, is it?
Yeah. Well, when I worked in law, I worked in corporate and securities law, mm-hmm. and I felt that, I was helping rich people become richer, build companies, which was exciting at first, mm-hmm. learning how companies work. But ultimately, it wasn't very rewarding, personally, intrinsically rewarding. And I wanted to do more. I wanted to help people who really needed help. And I took a leave from work at one point and spent about 3 months really meditating on what I should be doing with my life or what was my purpose. And it just kept coming back to, helping people, being of service, and transforming some of the suffering I've been going through into something meaningful. Because it's been a lot of suffering, and I think, has this all been in vain? Am I just suffering for the sake of it? Or can I use it to help other people? And that's how I came to switching careers, to becoming a counselor and a life coach. And now that I'm here, I can feel that, I'm really aligned with what I'm meant to be doing, and things are flowing really well, and I'm really, really just feel so fulfilled and rewarded by my career.
Yeah, I totally understand that. It's just one of those things when you finally figure out what it is you're supposed to be doing with life, it's like it's no longer work. It's just passion, mm-hmm. right?
That's right. Yes, absolutely.
I had a thought, and it you know how it just kind of.
Yep,
flutters away.
I know how that happens.
Flutter.
Yeah.
Bye bye.
Yeah, it's the brain fog.
Yeah, it does happen on occasion. So you're coming from this from the point of not somebody who is on the outside looking in. You can actually join in with is like, hey, I totally understand that. And does that make a difference in when you're actually speaking with people?
I think it does. In the one hand, I feel for me, I feel like I can really fully be empathetic with someone because I relate to what they're going through, whether it's the same condition or not. I understand physical pain and suffering and emotional pain and suffering. And it really helps me relate to the people I work with. I also think it helps because, you know, I don't often talk about or share my story with the clients I'm working with, but once in a while I'll disclose a little bit about my journey, especially if they're struggling, and it can be really helpful for other people to hear that they're not alone. They're not the only people that are going through this or have gone through it, and that I've been there too, and that can be comforting. I know it has been for me to connect with other people who've had similar experiences. Because I think we can end up feeling really alone when we have these conditions, especially because we often don't get out as much as we used to. We can't be as social. They can be quite isolating. And so we're not being exposed to other people in the same position, you know. I think it's important to know that this is not an uncommon problem and that there's other people out there who really get it.
Sometimes it's a little difficult for somebody who hasn't gone through it to get it as well as somebody who has actually gone through it.
I don't think someone who hasn't gone through it can understand really at all what it's like unless they've had some sort of pain and struggle of their own mm-hmm. that they can relate it to, because part of the problem, I think, with conditions like fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, even migraines, all that stuff, is it's an invisible illness. So people look at us and they think, wow, you look great. You look healthy. You know, you look awesome. And they don't see what we're feeling inside. So it can be really easy to forget that we're in pain, to not believe that what we're experiencing on the inside is actually happening. They can doubt our conditions or be more dismissive of them. So I find it can be really challenging in that respect.
Yeah. Do you think that you get a lot of judgment from people? Or especially on the bad days?
That's a good question. I don't, at this point in my life, I don't feel it. If it's happening, I don't feel it. I've worked really hard on becoming more resilient. I have a fantastic support foundation myself with wonderful friends who've really accepted that, you know, this is the way it is, and they don't question it. And they kind of follow my lead when it comes to what I'm able to do. Really grateful to have those people in my life. My family was definitely skeptical. I struggled a lot with my father, who was a physician and didn't believe there was anything wrong with me. Mm-hmm. He died a couple of years ago. And so that judgment's been sort of relieved. That was really hard. That was extremely hard. You know, once in a while, if I'm having a bad day and I use the disabled parking spot because I have the little sign, I've been challenged a few times. You know, that's for disabled people. And I'll say, yes, this is my path. And, you know, people just don't believe it because I don't look sick. And I don't look old or you know, I'm not using a wheelchair. But I do my best not to take those things personally.
Sometimes people need to see what happens behind closed doors. When you get home, you take your shoes off, let your hair down, and it's like, and you know, what really happens, right?
Hit the couch and don't leave. You know, and even things like, you know, people are surprised when I say, getting ready in the mornings is difficult on the days where I wash my hair and put makeup on because I have a shower, wash my hair, and then I need to rest. after the shower.
Yeah. So why don't you give us your contact information one more time?
Sure.
And I will tell people that, they can actually find your book on Amazon. I saw that on your website. Go ahead with the rest of it.
You can find my books, Aches, Pains, and Love, A Guide to Dating and Relationships for Those with Chronic Pain and Illness, on Amazon, on Indigo, at select Indigo stores. My website is kiralynne.com, KIRALYNNE.com, and there are more links to other sites. The book's also available on Kobo, Smashwords. You can find more information on my website and how to contact me directly there.
Well, Kira, it has been a pleasure, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, so that was Karen.
Yeah, Kira.
Kira. All right. So we will be back next week, and have a great day.
Yeah.
So. Anything I'm... No, Ben's on next week. Am I right?
I think Ben does have somebody, but I should probably be around.
Yeah, so he'll be around. So we will be back next week on the Community Living Show. Have a great day. We're also on email, on the Gmail email, communityliving.radio@gmail.com, if you have any comments or questions. Have a great day, everybody.
All right.
See you again next week.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
from CM to CIR.